quote, "If you've got a worthwhile mission, top talent will be attracted to you. Then you'll welcome having these large soul-sucking corporations in your backyard."
Nice. That's spoken like a true entrepreneur there.
Welcome to the GeekWire podcast. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
I'm GeekWire co-founder John Cook.
And I'm aerospace and science editor Alan Boyle.
All right. Hey, it's great to have you here in the studio, Alan.
Yeah.
All right.
Glad to be here.
Great. So we wanted to have you in part because there was a fascinating conference this past week that you were covering remotely.
Yeah.
And we'll be talking about that in just a second. It has to do with Mars, but not the Mars that everybody would think of.
Do you want me to give the acronym now?
Yeah, well, sure. Go
sure.
For it.
Machine language is the M, automation is the A, robotics is the R, and space is the S.
And of course, with those four things, it involves Jeff Bezos and Amazon.
Of course. Yeah. And Blue Origin.
That's great. Coming up later on, we're going to be talking about an interesting milestone for the startup community and the larger Seattle tech world, 15 years after the beginning of the Silicon Valley invasion.
I'll take issue with that, but yes.
Okay, sounds good. All that and more coming up this week on the GeekWire podcast, and of course, the Random Channel, when I'm going to have to talk about AirPods. I just have to talk about Apple AirPods on the Random Channel, so stick around for that. Alan, let's talk about the Mars conference. You just gave the acronym. What is this conference? Where was it? Can you sort of give
sure.
the context?
Why
for
weren't
people
you invited?
Who, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
why wasn't
what
I
I'm
invited?
Asking. That's what I'm wondering.
Do they have any press there?
Every once in a while they do, yeah. Last year they had maybe four or five journalists there. I don't know why my invitation keeps getting lost in the mail. But it is a very exclusive thing that started in 2016. Amazon and Jeff Bezos bring a lot of luminaries from the tech world, from the science world. This year, let's see, they had Adam Savage from the Mythbusters, Mark Hamill, who is Luke Skywalker.
Yes,
oh,
exciting.
I am your
I know.
Father.
Yes.
And
I love the photo and the one. Someone took a selfie and Luke Skywalker sitting in the background.
The Chaise Lounge.
So like way in the background.
Yes, it was really funny.
So I think it started out mostly because probably Jeff thought it was going to be a cool thing to do, to just have all these cool gadgets and everything.
That's what it seems like to me. This is like Jeff Bezos' private little
geeks.
Party. Yeah.
Yeah, and some of the images from past Mars events included Bezos in kind of a Sigourney Weaver style giant robot. That
a
he
giant
was
robot. Yeah, that was 2017. And then the picture that went viral in 2018 was Jeff Bezos with a robot dog walking alongside him. I guess the dragonfly is the closest thing this year that Jeff had a robotic dragonfly buzzing around his head and seemed to really get a kick out of that.
So let's talk about that in particular, Alan, because one of the things I wanted to get into, apart from just sort of the novelty of Jeff Bezos and him playing with all this robotics and different types of technology, is the types of robots that they showed this year. Many of them were emulated after animals or biological creatures.
Right.
Can you explain that trend?
That does seem to be one of the big trends from this year is biomimetic robots, bio-inspired robots, robots that draw from natural flyers or walkers or crawlers. And so they did seem to want to highlight that this year is robots that acted like dragonflies or butterflies or caterpillars or whatever. So, and, you know, we might see some of these in real life one of these days. I think that's one
maybe
of the
a caterpillar-inspired robot will deliver my Amazon packages to my doorstep, right?
Yeah, there you go. And you're getting into that point, is that this is something where Amazon is kind of presenting itself as a thought leader, that they're bringing the people together. They're showing off the cool technology. One of the journalists who did get an invitation last year said that he noticed that there was no one from Apple or Microsoft or Google at this big gathering. Gathering at Palm Springs, at the Parker Resort at Palm Springs. Very, very exclusive place to have your summer camp for geeks.
Well, they want all the talent and geeks to themselves at Amazon, I presume.
And, you know, just the sense that, oh, gee, if I'm going to look for the coolest stuff, this is where I look. And Amazon might be able to kind of get some of that secret sauce going so that people come out of that with innovations that somehow people can associate in the future with Amazon.
The thing that struck me about your story wasn't that this was so much about Amazon, but that it was about Jeff Bezos. To me, and I think this is Jeff Bezos' thing, and the part of his brain that it's scratching is the same part that's building the 10,000-year clock in the mountain in Texas. I don't know. There seemed like there were some parallels between that project and what they're talking about and doing in Palm Springs at the Mars conference. Any connection points there? Because it seems like real distant in the future,
yeah,
the kind of wild stuff going on.
I can imagine that the genesis is Jeff just saying, wow, I would love to get these cool people together and get them talking with each other, be in on that a little bit. But also, you know, if they cook up some cool stuff, I can feel like I've helped make that contribution.
And
it is very personal.
And the other thing that struck me is also, what is the big conference outside of Boise, the Sun Valley, where it seemed like
Allen and Company.
Yeah, it seemed like this is Bezos's version of it, but it's real geeky science, robots, AI stuff going on, and that's what he's into.
Yeah.
So. Well, I think it's also easy to lose sight of the fact that robotics are key for Amazon, and there's a real question if you look 20, 30 years out. I'm assuming Amazon will still be here. Maybe that's an incorrect assumption to make, but at that point, you have to ask yourself, how much of the productivity that Amazon puts out in a year will be created by robots versus humans? And you're already seeing in their fulfillment centers and their warehouses, distribution centers, a huge amount of robotics. And they acquired Kiva Systems a while back, the robotics company that creates the sort of the pedestal robots, or the robots that basically allow you to put shelving on top of them,
right,
and scooch around the warehouse.
And autonomous drones. I mean, drones is a huge part, and that's where you get into the flying robots. They might not look like dragonflies, but they will be doing the sorts of things that were demonstrated at Mars.
Yeah, or, you know, kind of from point A to point B on the trucking solution too, with investments there that they're involved in. So you can imagine the future, yes, in from purchasing an item that there is not really a touch point by a human at all for an Amazon good to be delivered from warehouse to you.
So we should mention that there's a spinoff, the open to the public ReMars conference that is planned in June in Las Vegas, and people are able to sign up for that. It's going to cost $19.99, and I'm not talking $19.19, 99 cents.
It's more like a tech conference, right?
Yeah, that's right. So, that's an opportunity for people to basically buy or have their way paid to rub elbows with Jeff Bezos and see some of this cool technology.
So Bezos will be there at the ReMars event,
mm-hmm,
too?
You
oh,
bet.
Interesting. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
And also, one of the things that we saw during this Mars conference was Jeff Bezos sitting in basically a drone that is able to take people. That's something that's being built by Lyft Aircraft. The Hexa personal drone copter, one-person copter, and that aircraft is going to be brought to Seattle at some point. And
so, are you going to fly in it?
That's what I want to do.
Okay,
so
cool.
I'll see if I get invitation.
Yeah, it was like kind of a big white thing, big white contraption, and he was
huge,
sitting in it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it's
like a hexacopter, but it looks like it has something like 16 rotors on it.
How high does it go?
High enough.
High enough to die if it crashes?
Yeah.
Okay,
uh-huh.
Well, there you go.
That's good. All right.
No, that's not good.
that could end up coming to Seattle in some form?
Yeah. Lyft announced actually at another conference, the South by Southwest conference, that they were going to take this Hexa copter on the road, and Seattle is going to be one of the stops.
That's good, because ultimately when the professional hockey team and then potentially the NBA team go into what's currently known as Key Arena. That's basically going to be the only way you're going to be able to get from I-5 to
Didn't they mention that at one point?
Yeah.
The leadership of the new hockey franchise said that that was a potential transportation option was drones.
Yes, and they were ridiculed.
They were serious.
They were serious, yeah. And then they were ridiculed for it. To me, it's not a question of whether it's a legitimate approach. It's a question of when it's going to be a legitimate approach.
What about just a zip line from Capitol Hill to Key Arena?
Ooh, you know how we say some
or
of the
Queen
best...
Anne. Queen Anne.
Some, yeah. We always say Queen some Anne. Of the best ideas come up on the podcast,
that's
and,
right.
And I think this is the exception.
There we go.
All right, we are here. It's Todd Bishop with John Cook and Alan Boyle. Alan's coverage of the Mars event, which was remarkable because you were not there. They didn't let you in. But you can find that at geekwire.com. And now that we've dedicated a whole initial segment of the podcast to it, they have to let you in next year, right?
Absolutely.
All right. You're listening to the GeekWire podcast, and we will be right back.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back to the GeekWire podcast. It's Todd Bishop with John Cook and our special guest in the studio this week, Alan Boyle, GeekWire's aerospace and science editor. We just got done talking about a robotics and high-tech conference that was held this past week by Amazon and Jeff Bezos. Another story that you covered this past week, Alan, was Microsoft and University of Washington demonstrate automated DNA data storage.
Does this tie into robots?
A little bit. Well,
automation for sure. That's the point of this research that Microsoft and UW have been working on this project for a long time. The idea is, you know, we're storing data electronically. You know, we've got the cloud. There are huge server farms. What if you could shrink that down to the size of a test tube? And that's what Microsoft and UW are trying to do with DNA data storage, that they actually encode molecules of DNA with the letters of the it's the genetic alphabet, but in this case, it's totally artificial. It's not like you are fiddling with human DNA. You're building these molecules from scratch. And the benefit of that is that the density of data storage goes way up. You can store a billion bytes of information in a space the size of a cubic inch. And so they've been able to kind of start down that road. They've been able to encode an OK Go video in DNA and then read it back out. But it's really a lab experiment at this point, that you have to sequence the DNA, you have to move all these pipettes around, and it's not really commercially viable to do it that way. It's just a lab experiment.
In your story, you report that this was published in Nature Scientific Reports, and they encoded the word hello as a proof of concept.
Right.
Which they didn't even get the world in there, because it's supposed to be hello world, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, you got to start somewhere. But and the point of it is not, obviously, hello does not take up billions of bytes. But what they wanted to show is that you could design a system that would do all this automatically, that all you have to do is type in hello, press return, and then this mechanism does all the translation into DNA code, synthesizes the DNA, stores it someplace, and then when you want to read it out, it'll take that, sequence the DNA, read the molecular code, and then translate that back into the letters for hello. And they were able to do that. So, you know, this is like one small step that could lead to a giant leap for molecular computing.
So, So I'm trying to wrap my head around this. If this is fully realized in however many decades, I would imagine, we're talking decades, not years here.
Well, when I was talking with the researchers, I said, well, the standard answer to that is 5 years. And so are you going to give me the 5-year answer? They laughed. You know, it's hard to predict at this point how long it's going to take. But it's not going to be like you're going to have a DNA desktop computer. It's more likely to be something that's deployed to the cloud to store the data. You'll have a hybrid system in the data centers where some of it is going to be electronic and then some of it is going to be based on fluidics, where you're moving chemicals around to encode this into DNA and store it and then bring it back out.
Interesting. Is there a startup or a something in here? Do you know what I mean? Could somebody take this research and do something interesting with it in the meantime?
Well, the folks at Microsoft and UW haven't, as far as I know, they haven't gotten to the startup stage with this yet. It's still a research project. They do work with Silicon Valley a company called Twist Bioscience. Microsoft has a big relationship with them to synthesize the DNA. And so I wouldn't be surprised if Twist Bioscience saw this as something that they could turn into some sort of product at some point.
Interesting. Okay. Lots of cool stuff going on at the UW. And that makes me think of this bigger picture of the Seattle startup scene, which was the subject of another story that we covered this past week. John Taylor Soper, our managing editor on our team, wrote a piece about the state of the Seattle startup market just about 15 years after Google first opened its Seattle Engineering Center, which in my mind, and it sounds like you're going to disagree with me.
Yes, I will.
In my mind, that was the watershed moment, the 2004 opening of the Google Kirkland office, which we covered back at the Seattle PI. That, looking back, was the trigger that kicked off this big wave of engineering centers, largely from Silicon Valley tech companies. We are now counting nearly 120 of them in the Seattle region. And the question is, what impact is this having 15 years later on the startup community as these giant tech companies put their flag here and then go after all the engineers, sucking the oxygen out of the market? And that's what the story looked into. We can talk about sort of the nuanced findings of Taylor's reporting, but let's hear your take, John.
Well, my disagreement was, I like the way you set it up here as a watershed moment, but it really wasn't the first.
Oh, no. It was the first in a new wave. And
a new wave because there were companies
Cisco.
Like...
Cisco was here
first. There were a number of large companies. Adobe had purchased Aldis.
Right.
So that was my only quibble with it. But you're largely right. I think Google's arrival did set forth a new path of this new wave of Silicon Valley tech giants that now are growing rapidly here in Seattle, whether it's Dropbox or eBay or Salesforce or Apple or, you know, as you said, the list goes on, more than 120 of them. But I think it is one of the biggest stories that we've tracked in the Seattle tech community and in the Seattle community, really, in the last 5 to 10 years as the arrival of these Silicon Valley tech giants. And it really is dramatically changing the landscape in ways that I would say in the short term is negatively impacting the startup community.
Is there some pushback?
There's pushback when you're the CEO of a 25-person venture-backed company and you lose two or three of your best engineers to Facebook or Dropbox or Amazon, for that matter, even though it's not one of the engineering centers. So, yeah, I think it has made it a lot harder for some of the startup companies to really recruit and take root here.
The contention of some of the people that Taylor talked to was that short term, yes, there is some pain as a lot of these engineers get pulled in by Salesforce or Facebook or Dropbox, whoever it might be, rather than going to a startup or doing startups on their own. And that's the opportunity cost, right? Because you don't know what those people could have created, what companies they could have contributed to. There may be companies that were never born that would have been born otherwise. But if you look at it 15 years later, Taylor cited Convoy, the trucking logistics company, as an example. Founded in Seattle, they're basically the Uber for trucking. And Tim Prouty, who is their engineering leader, he came from another company.
Uber.
He went through Uber. So he went to Uber.
He was at a few different companies, yeah.
EMC to Uber to Convoy. And then his leadership team in the engineering office, they came from Dropbox, Twitter, Palantir. So you can see how they're filtering through, and maybe they wouldn't have even been in this market if not for those engineering centers.
Yeah,
and then they went to a startup.
And there's some truth to that. I think Seattle's or Convoy is a bit of an outlier. We, frankly, the Seattle area needs more stories like Convoy, that there are they are heavily funded to the point that they can actually recruit and go up head to head with a Facebook or Twitter or Amazon, and Convoy is at that point. I mean, it's a big reason why you've seen some of these companies, you know, they get called unicorns because they are multi-billion dollar startup valuations on these companies. This is a big reason why these companies are raising that level of capital, is so that they can compete for engineers.
My favorite quote, and kind of the quote in the story that restored my faith in all of Seattle's startup founders, was from Tony Huang, the co-founder and CEO of Possible Finance. He told Taylor, in terms of this competition with these big tech companies, quote, "If you've got a worthwhile mission, top talent will be attracted to you. Then you'll welcome having these large soul-sucking corporations in your backyard."
Nice.
It's like, yes. Yeah. There you go. Just kind of, you know, get them.
That's spoken like a true entrepreneur there.
Exactly. So big picture, if you look at it, if you had to choose, if you were sort of the overseer, the king of the Seattle startup world, would you choose to bring these big engineering centers up from Silicon Valley, or would you let the Seattle startup community let a thousand flowers
grow? No, you would welcome them. I mean, you got to look at the community not just as a startup community, but as a full tech community, and you would be crazy if you weren't welcoming these types of organizations that are bringing in extremely high-paying jobs and recruiting a lot of smart people and a lot of engineers. So it is a good thing. There is a worry and an undercurrent with some of the folks I've talked to in the startup community that Seattle is becoming just a engineering outpost, mm-hmm. though. And it's becoming this branch center of Silicon Valley and not necessarily the creative innovation wave that you need from the startup and entrepreneurial ranks. But I do think this long term, I agree with the analysis that this is largely positive.
And if I can wedge in a word about aerospace, I know I've heard multiple times from aerospace companies that this is why they are setting up shop in the Seattle area, is because you do have an engineering ecosystem, that there's a lot of slop over from people who are working with computers to people who are working on aerospace and aviation projects. For example, Magna X recently moved its company headquarters from Australia to Redmond to take advantage of that, and now they're getting ready to ramp up to do electric propulsion for small airplanes.
And some of the pitch there is probably, hey, yeah, you can go work on the next app for food delivery to your doorstep, or the next social network that's going to allow you to connect with your friend, or you can build engines and rockets and spacecraft. And,
right.
You know, so I think there is interesting crossover between the aerospace and traditional tech communities.
Well, the classic example is one that Elon Musk talks about in terms of SpaceX, and that's video game developers and designers, because a lot of the things that they're doing are very easily translated mm-hmm. into the simulations that need to happen.
Right. Yeah, with like VR and Oculus. Yeah. And
absolutely.
Yeah. And the GPU chips that are used for video games, that's the basis for AI hardware now. So.
And that's a whole other topic, because SpaceX is there in Redmond with its satellite venture,
sure.
in part because of the rich video game
mm-hmm.
heritage that's in that area between Nintendo, Microsoft, Valve. That's an interesting
angle. That's one thing that a satellite constellation can help with, is playing video games better over a network.
What is the status of that? Because that's what they're doing, is they're creating a satellite internet network.
Yeah, Starlink.
Yeah.
So they are hoping to launch some more. This is SpaceX.
Oh, SpaceX, yeah.
So, out of the Redmond office.
So the satellites are being built at a Redmond, Washington facility, and the plan is to start launching the satellites for that constellation this year.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, so that'll be a big story.
In a few months, they're supposed to be another launch. They already have two prototype satellites up there, but this is going to be the real deal coming up.
Wow.
It's kind of a throwback to like Teledesic, right? The Craig McCaw Internet mm-hmm. in the Sky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That didn't work out so well.
And it just goes to show you what's the saying in the tech world, being too early is almost as bad or sometimes worse than being wrong. You know, there's so many of those things you look at. Imagine if Teledesic was happening today, they would have so much more technology, advances, infrastructure to build on.
Mm-hmm. And some of the people who were involved in Teledesic are, of course, still around in the Seattle area. And some of them are involved in this venture called Earth Now, which wants to do live video from orbit. And so, the Teledesic legacy continues.
Wow. Okay. All right. We are talking about molecular computing and space and satellites. This is a great... This is why I wanted to have you in, Alan. You can read Alan's story about the University of Washington's partnership with Microsoft on that DNA-based computing. And you can also read Taylor Soper's story about the 15 years since the Silicon Valley engineering centers started establishing their operations here and the impact on the startup community. We'll link to those from the show notes on GeekWire. We've got one more segment coming up. It's our random channel, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. It's time for the random channel, that moment of the week where we talk about all the random items we were buzzing about behind the scenes at GeekWire this week. Alan, you just mentioned one during the break that I hadn't heard about.
Yeah. Well, SpaceX, of course, has the Falcon 9 and they have the Falcon Heavy. And then the next step is this super duper rocket called Starship. It used to be known as the Big Frickin' Rocket or Big Falcon Rocket. Now it's known as Starship with the Falcon Super Heavy booster. And so there's a test that's coming up, the first short hop test for the Starship Super Heavy booster.
Okay, now let's break this down because I thought that the Falcon Heavy, which took off last February right. 2018, mm-hmm. is that the only time it's flown or has it flown since?
Right, although they're getting ready to fly it again in the next couple months.
I thought that was the BFR.
No.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So there's a whole other wrinkle here. I was totally under the wrong impression on that.
That's why it's random, man.
So you've got the Starship.
Starship.
Mm-hmm. And that's bigger than the Falcon Heavy?
It's bigger than the Falcon Heavy. It's the spacecraft that Elon Musk hopes will take settlers to Mars and send people around the moon, like this Japanese billionaire bought a ride. He's going to take the ride on the Starship with some of his artistic friends.
What does it look like?
It looks like the kind of rocket you see in a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Like, what do you mean?
It's a classic rocket with a pointy end and fins and everything. But the test article that they're trying to test the rocket engine on is kind of cut off. So there's not any pointy end. It's called the Starship Hopper. It does have fins. It has kind of a rounded off top. And the aim is just to start testing the Raptor engine, a methane-fueled engine. And so this is happening down in South Texas. It's something that is a little bit under the radar, but if you're a space geek, you are just religiously watching the Starship cam that is set up in Texas for updates on the test. As of press time, they haven't quite tested it yet, but by the time you hear this, it might well have been tested for the very first time, and the space geeks will go wild.
Nice. So we'll link to either your story about it or the cam itself, depending on the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very good.
Found mine.
Okay.
You found your item?
Where
do you want to go?
No, go ahead, John.
Well, I was just going through our random channel on Slack, and did you see the VC starter kit?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. This is funny. This looks like it's a kind of a gag business, but I think you can actually buy a VC starter kit if you want to look and act like a venture capitalist, which audience really does.
In fact, $400.
For $499, a lot of our audience is probably venture capitalists, that they probably already have this, but it's really funny. As part of the starter kit, you get a fleece vest, Patagonia. Every VC wardrobe needs a Patagonia better sweater fleece. You get Allbirds. You know what Allbirds are, right?
You know what? I've heard the name, and I know
you know
should.
Allbirds, they're these like
because I'm looking into the VC starter kit.
Exactly. Yeah, Alan, you're going to get there. And then you would get a couple books. You get Sapiens. Have you read Sapiens, Alan?
I'll pretend that I have.
Okay, I would assume you have. 0 to 1 by Peter Thiel. And there's Men's and Women's for the VC starter kit. So I thought that was pretty clever that you can go out there and look like a VC if you really want to.
You can upgrade the kit too. You know, you can. The sky's the limit.
Yeah, let's see. They have
a little more investment.
They have an FAQ. It looks like the funding. If you buy one of the VC starter kits, looks like the funding goes to a nonprofit,
Allraise,
an organization dedicated to diversity in funders and founders. But this is pretty funny.
So it's ultimately altruistic.
Ultimately, yes.
It's like vcstarterkit.com?
That is correct. vcstarterkit.com. Thank you,
nice.
Alan.
Nice. Well, I've actually got a couple different items. The baseball season is starting. I don't know if you know this.
I do.
Do you follow this?
Well, slightly. Yeah, I know Ichiro was in Tokyo, and there was his farewell game.
Yeah.
So the stadium in Seattle has long been known as Safeco Field, the Mariners ballpark. And it's now T-Mobile Park, named after my wireless carrier.
Yay.
and potentially
I like
yours.
The branding I'm seeing on the stadium. Well, I think it looks fancy.
So Kurt Schlosser on our team was there, and he said that the magenta was a little bit jarring at first.
Yeah.
I guess that's the point. They
want
to get their brand out there. But I'm excited because we'll, as T-Mobile customers, you get kind of like exclusive access. You get to go through a fast
track. You have a special gate.
Really?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
That's cool.
Which I love. It's kind of, well, it is actually something that T-Mobile has done well.
That is a really good idea.
Yes.
They are so good on marketing stuff.
They really are. So like, you know, they have a deal with GoGo Internet. So if you go on a plane, you can get free Wi-Fi on a plane. And then they also do their T-Mobile Tuesday stuff. At any rate, I'm not advertising for them. I'm just saying, I thought it was
cool. There's a T-Mobile Tuesday deal for the
VC starter kit.
No, for the VC starter tickets.
Oh, yeah. That's smart. See, I just like it because it's sort of extending this approach of, hey, you're in the club if you're in T-Mobile. And that's, for better or worse, that's what they do. I'm not promoting them.
Unless they pay us.
So you're going to be going through the fast track line, I'm sure.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, there have been times when I've been in lines at Safeco. I just get there at the wrong time. See, it's going to be hard not to call it Safeco, by the way.
I'm sure it's going to get beat into you. Don't worry.
Timo Field. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There you go. So that's my one random channel item. My other was a product that I've been waiting for months for. Finally was announced this past week. Apple's AirPods 2.
Oh.
Were you familiar with this?
I did not know that happened.
So
I still have AirPods 1, and I do love them.
So I had this whole dilemma that I talked about a lot on various GeekWire shows over the past couple of months. I lost my AirPods. I am just completely lost without my AirPods. And so I lost them a couple months back. I'd made a deal with my wife that if I lost them, I wouldn't buy another pair, and whole story. At any rate, I had this dilemma. It was, do I buy another pair of AirPods after she gave me permission, or do I wait? Because there were all these rumors of these amazing new pair of AirPods that Apple was going to be coming out with, including a special surface that would help them stay in your ears. And the main feature that I want in the AirPods is a dark color, like black, like full black or some other.
That's the main feature is the color.
Okay, I feel so self-conscious walking around with these like Star Trek Uhuru things coming out of my ears. If I don't get them in there, it's just like these big white things in your ears screaming that you paid $160 for a pair of earbuds. At any rate, they came out, and I love this because half of the features that were rumored are not in here. Basically, you can get one with a case that charges wirelessly, and there's some other things. Oh, Siri integration. Hey, Siri integration. Like, you don't have to tap them anymore. You just say, hey, Siri. At any rate, completely underwhelming, so victory for me.
And did they come in black?
No black. All the features that I would have wanted, all the features that I wanted, they aren't in there. So anyway, the AirPods. So I found my original ones that I lost. And
where were they?
They were inside our easy chair in the living room.
Oh,
and so, you know, it was kind of ironic
spot to lose something.
Because I accidentally dropped one of the new ones into the easy chair, and then I had to flip it over, and I was like, oh my God, there it is. And so my wife took my old pair, and now she is a complete convert. Like, she loves them. People are skeptical of them at first, but that whole notion of not being tethered to your phone.
Yeah, I got to say, I was a little skeptical, but I am a big convert as well.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you for coming in, Alan. So Alan Boyle, GeekWire's aerospace and science editor. You can follow him on Twitter at B0YLE. And of course, check out all of GeekWire's aerospace and science coverage, which Alan leads. And I highly recommend subscribing to all our newsletters, but including Alan's, the weekly aerospace and science newsletter, is a great way to just catch up all at once. Anything you want to mention, John?
Nope, I think we're all set.
Some events?
Yeah.
Oh, the events. GeekWire Awards coming up May 2nd at MoPop. We're going to have 13 different categories, and it's going to be a great celebration of the Pacific Northwest tech community.
That's
GeekWire.com/awards.
That's right, and we are accepting nominations now. And
no, we're not. As of today, we're done, Todd. Nominations are over.
So out of the loop. You missed it.
Yes,
we missed it.
We've got a great list. We're going to be narrowing them down to 5 finalists in each category and off to the races.
And then people are going to be able to vote.
That's correct.
So there's still that part of the process to come.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for keeping John on task here, Alan. That was good. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.